Welcome to the Keto Matrix podcast in episode 39. Okay, so I say all the time, this was a long anticipated, awaited guest and blah, blah, blah. I always say that, but I truly do mean that. The ability and the humility that comes with having amazing conversations with amazing people will forever be the thing that continues to keep me going and recording new episodes. But having said that, this episode specifically is probably one of the most persistent cases for me to actually get a guest on just because of the busy life that they live. So episode 39 is with Dr. Kevin Stock. And just as an FYI, I throw this out there usually at the end, it'll be in the show notes, but his website for information is kevinstock.io. I would absolutely say that he is probably one of the most underrated people to follow on social media platforms, as well as his blog. And when I say underrated, I mean, listen, the man has less than 10,000 followers and he just provides nothing but gems. If you look at or seek true information that's really, really legit, profound, insightful, thought-provoking, you need to go follow him. You absolutely got to follow him on social media. And if you go to his website, again, kevinstock.io, you can just throw your email in and he will send you the things that he posts on a regular basis. I mean, but just looking at his site right now, carnivore diet experiments, he goes through the newsletter and it mentions the carnivore diet and experiments he's done over the last 2+ years. There's health dangers of sun avoidance and why lathering sunscreen isn't necessarily the best thing. And, you know, vitamin D and the supplements that come with it. He talks about cholesterol and the carnivore diet. He's gone through evidence for a meat-based diet and sharing those things, meat and the brain and, you know, and how we actually became sapiens, like all of these different things. I mean, he's got tons of insightful information. Your brain on meat, listen to the episode, enjoy the episode, but seriously, real talk, go follow him, see the things that he's posting and what he's doing, those that he is networked with, and just be enlightened. Such great information he's thrown out there. And I am super thankful that he took the time to hop on the episode. So lean in, enjoy, and all as always, thank you, thank you, thank you for listening. I really, truly do say this and mean it, but the Keto Matrix podcast listeners are literally the most loyal. I love that when I throw an episode up, whether it's been 2 weeks or 2 months since I threw an episode up, you guys hop on it, listen to it right away, and the play count goes from 0 to 1 million, like no joke. I'm being totally exaggerating with the million, but I'm super shocked at just how accurate from episode to episode, the timelines, usually within 24 to 48 hours, you guys have all listened. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. And just be ready. The next few days, I'm going to be throwing out a ton of episodes that I have that are just gems that need to go out. So thank you so much. Without further ado, let's jump in the episode.
The Keto Matrix Podcast, where myths are busted, science is explained, and the keto lifestyle is discussed by industry experts and everyday people alike. For more information and support, go to theketomatrix.com. Now, let's jump into our latest episode.
Okay, so ladies and gents, this is another one of those episodes where Brittany is not here to wheel me in. So if for any reason this gets overly complicated, starts to sound way too scientific, I apologize. Maybe we'll bring Brittany on to, I don't know, decipher through the things that had confused and left people off. I will do my best to keep the information as Crayola clear as possible, but I have to say, as I have said on so many other episodes, this is a very, very much anticipated guest who literally for months I've been trying to get some time with. And so now he's finally on. Dr. Kevin Stock is about to blow your minds, and mine included. How are you doing today, bro?
Hey, I'm doing good, and thank you so much for having me on. And I want to apologize, but I think this might be a good place to start, a good lesson that I think is worth saying. And I can tie it into nutrition, but so Neo, you reached out to me last year, I think in December, yeah, with an Instagram message, and it was a very good Instagram message. It was like, it was personalized, it was like clear that, you know, I was like, hey, he cares, I'm gonna respond. So you shot me an email, and then December wasn't good. And then, so I was like, could you reach out to me in Q1 next year? And then you reached out to me in Q1. I'm like, all right, I decided like I'm not doing any interviews in Q1 because I was really focused on research and writing. So I was like, if you could reach out to me in Q2, and then you reached out to me in Q2. And then I had another scheduling mishap. Anyways, long story short is, not only am I like a terrible person, but like, Neo, that is like the exact definition of like how people succeed. Like, you just followed up consistently, as you said, with a good attitude, like every time. Like, if I was you, I'd have been like, you know, screw this guy. But like, I mean, you were just positive each time. I'm like, man, this guy, like, so your clients, like, I feel they are in good hands with someone that is going to stay on top of them. Like, I appreciate it. That's, long story short, I appreciate it. I think that's like, you know, the persistence, the follow up, the positive attitude. Like, those are all the keys to success. Like, when it comes to like nutrition and like changing your life, you know, like consistency and diet and workout and things like that, that's what makes all the difference. And like, you just demonstrated that like to the T in scheduling this. So I appreciate all that that you went through.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And no, I mean, listen, I try to make sure everyone is aware of the fact that we all live busy lives. And I mean, I've done episodes where I've talked about all the different things that I do in my various backgrounds. But seriously, I feel like my life gets extremely crazy. And so if I can't extend the same grace that I know I need when it comes to scheduling and getting things on the calendar and deadlines that I have and other commitments that are made, I mean, it's just the world is reciprocate what it is that you want. And as far as the positive aspect of it, I don't have the energy to be negative about anything. Like, there's just, I like that. There's no purpose in that. So no, it's cool, man. And I will say, sure, are there people that I've requested or wanted to have on that I've said, okay, no worries? Yes. You're not one of those individuals. I really do value the information that you share, your presence, your profile, the things that you have going on, the research and the time that it takes for you to kind of go through those things. And so, you know, this is a selfless thing, man. I make no money doing a podcast. I really just want my clients and those that follow to be able to tune in on information that I feel is valuable, but really kind of unbiased. You know, you're not giving me anything for being on here. I don't think we're going to promote or push anything that is going to benefit either of us financially in that regard. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, to make sure that there's at least one place on the internet that people can kind of go in, log into and listen to and get some unbiased info that will help change their life for the positive is my only goal. So I appreciate you taking the time out, man. I value that. And though I know this episode is going to be shorter than I would have probably wanted it to be, just based on how much I know I want to pick your brain on things, I think that this will be something valuable everyone can take something from. So,
make it worth everyone's time.
Yeah, for sure. So let's kind of, first off, I'm just going to say, I know that the one of the first things that attracted me to your profile was my brother from another mother, Danny, had shared some of the insight you were going through in regards to what the transition looks like from even ketogenic, which is still super clean for the most part if people are doing it correctly, to the carnivore aspect of eating. And it was the first time I ever saw someone finally present information that was easily digestible, as meat is, and in a manner in which people could kind of wrap their head around. And I loved it. I was like, man, more and more people need to be able to see this. So I think I reshared it. It was the first time I like reposted a story, which was weird. But can you kind of share a little bit about your background? What do you do? How did you find carnivore? You know, like, who are you?
Yeah, sure. And as you mentioned, we could talk about the transition to carnivore in a little bit, because even if you are eating a clean keto, a lot of times there are transition symptoms, and there's like a trough of despair that I call it, that like a lot of times you got to get through. And there's some ways to make that trough a little less deep, a little less long. But so I guess to kind of make a long story as short as possible, I have kind of been like a health fitness nut for a long, long time. It started in basically junior high as like an overweight kid that didn't want to be overweight anymore. And, you know, 20 years of diet and workout experiments and research later, here I am. But for the first, I'll say, 15 years or so, most of my, I'll say, health and fitness was really fitness focused. I was all about, hey, how do you lose fat? How do you build muscle? How do you optimize this? And I'll say that after about 15 years, I thought like, I had lost some interest, because like, I figured it out. Like, I know how to do that. It's no longer that interesting to me. And then more recently, since then, I had a switch in focus, and that was okay, I figured out the body thing, but I wanted to optimize brain power, and I'm going to try and keep this story short. I was working a lot.
Okay. You're good.
I had a couple of startup companies I was running. I was working a lot of hours. I was under probably more stress, definitely not getting as much sleep as I should. And anyways, I was like, you know what? I need to really optimize brain power. And I'd done a ketogenic diet in the past. But I cheated on keto, because as someone very versed in bodybuilding and focused on the body composition, you know, I would never dream of dropping my protein intake below 1 gram per pound of body weight. And I know, so whenever I did keto in the past, like, I would drop my protein down to about 1 gram per pound, and then, you know, mostly fat, besides that, very low carb, obviously, like a ketogenic diet. But this time I was like, you know what, I'm going to go quote unquote full keto. I'm going to drop my protein intake to about 0.75 grams per pound so I can get into that deep ketosis, get this brain power going. And I did that. I was in deep ketosis, and, you know, was I functioning better? It's hard to say. But one thing I did notice is, like, I lost a ton of muscle mass, and I was willing to sacrifice a little bit. but the amount that I was wasting away, I was like, you know what, this is unacceptable. and at that time I had re-gotten into, you know, researching plants. And a lot of it came from, like, evaluating my diet. And I was like, look, a few things are consistent in my diet. I've eaten a lot of lean meats, like chicken and whatnot. And I've always eaten a lot of vegetables. And I pulled on one thread of studying vegetables and worked with another. And the whole thing unweaved. And, like, for the last several years, I've done a very deep dive into studying plants. And as I eliminated plants from the diet one after another, I started with, like, a total lectin avoidance diet, and then another thing and another thing and another thing. And eventually I was just eating animal products. And I remember I still had MCT oil. So that was, like, the last thing I eventually dropped from plants was MCT oil. So I was in that realm for a long time. And then, I even dropped MCT oil, 'cause I was getting plenty of fat from red meat. And I had just been eating basically just meat since then for almost 2 years now. And I never felt better. Once I really upped the red meat intake, I guess I was upping the red meat intake and decreasing the plant-based foods at the same time. And when I started pulling those two levers, like, man, I felt so good. I did have an increase in brain power, and I wasn't crashing in the afternoons. I was sleeping better. Like, everything changed. And so I started sharing my research findings online, and you know, here we are today.
Yeah, cool. So one of the things I want to touch on that I think is super important, and we'll talk a little bit about, I've been really doing a lot of deep diving into, especially for women, utilization of higher protein amounts for hormone regulation, which we'll talk about that and dive into it. But my experience with keto, I didn't realize how similar our backgrounds were, in the sense that, so I'm a certified personal trainer. I've been certified twice, two different organizations, have been lifting and training since, I don't know, junior high, went through the whole pro hormone use, all these other things, got huge, then got fat, then decided, okay, fine, I know how to get rid of this. Like, I'll shape myself up, did all that stuff, and got to the point where, you know, I wasn't looking for an answer to body composition when I found keto. I was looking for an answer to improving my mental capacity, because I wasn't getting enough sleep and I really needed more of myself at the end of the day. And that's how I found keto. But I too was like, you know what, I'm going to just super, super get into as deep as I possibly can, drop my protein. At one point, I think I was under 30 grams of protein per day. Ooh. Dude, it was epically rough. But I was super lean. Like, yeah. I mean, my muscle fibers had muscle fibers. It was fantastic. But I lost a ton. My wife showed me pictures, I want to say maybe a month ago. And she was like, dude, look at these pictures. And I felt like a Somalian, like just a malnourished someone. And no bad reference to Somalia. I'm just saying, like, a bad situation. Yeah. Like, I did not have anywhere on me what I should have muscle mass wise. And I was like, I can't, I will never do this again. So I don't recommend it for anyone. It's just, I thinking about it and remembering those pictures, I'm just like, Man, this is just insane. So,
well, yeah, a lot of people in keto, like two things they do is they really reduce protein a lot. And then a lot of times they combine that with extended fasting. And like, whew, you do those two things, your muscle mass, you're going to melt it off. That's just a personal experience warning. There's research that I've read, like, deep ketosis is muscle sparing and whatnot. And I'm sure that's true to a degree, but I mean, when you push to the limit a little bit, it wasn't sparing any of my muscle.
not nearly enough of it anyway. And then you got to ask yourself, like, why? Like, what's the point? What's the purpose? Right. I mean, I feel like that's the thing that, you know, maybe there's the disconnect is that just because you can do something doesn't mean that you should. Like, yes, you can lose weight by dropping your protein through the floor, keeping your fat levels high and, you know, fasting. You can totally do that. But you could also drive 180 miles an hour on the highway, and I wouldn't recommend that to anyone either. So, you know, there's got to be the cause, effect, and the risk analysis done, and to ask yourself, what is it that you're really trying to accomplish and in what time frame? Yep. I don't think.
I mean, you were right on it. Like, so recently I've been talking a lot about body composition in relation to the carnivore diet, because a lot of people on a carnivore diet, and we can get into it, you know, they gain weight or their body composition is not exactly what they want to be. A lot of times people want to get like they want to be pretty ripped, what I call like unnaturally lean. And if you're eating to appetite and things like that, which is good with meat, a lot of times your body's not going to want to go to that extremely lean place all the time by itself. I've been talking about body composition and body fat, losing body fat in a carnivore diet. And one of the things is someone will talk to me and they're like, I'm eating 1500 calories or 1200 calories. I'm doing an hour of cardio a day. How can I lose body fat? I'm like, well, you could do 2 hours of cardio a day. You could drop your calories even more, but like you're going to get yourself in a place where you don't want to be. Like, so you can lose more fat in the short term, but that's not the way to approach it. And we could talk about how I would approach it later if you want, but it's like, you're right on. It's like, you have to have the right, there's a right way to do things to get to certain goals. So the short term mindset, man, you can really set yourself up for a lot more damage than you want, or a lot more suffering than you want to.
And that's, dude, I can't. So we're going down this road now. It is what it is. We're here. So I have a lot of people that'll come to me and they'll come to me and they're like, you know, I've been eating this way for X amount of period of time. I want to prep for whatever. They want to do a show, or they have a wedding, or, you know, their kids graduate, whatever the thing is. And I'm like, okay, cool. But then they give me this definitive timeline of, well, I want to do it in 12 weeks.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, like I'm willing to take you on, but like, what is it that you're trying to accomplish in the 12 weeks, and why is that the case? Because ultimately, for anyone listening, if you have a show coming up or something that you want to do, I would love to you to come to me a year before. Like, come to me a year before, because it's going to take 6 months to metabolically get you where you should be to even start what your prep's going to be. So
probably longer than that.
Yeah, exactly. But at least, you know, like, come to me at least 12 months out.
That's so I've done a couple of physique competitions, and what you do in the, you know, let's just call it 12-week prep. What you do in the 12-week prep is important, and it for lack of a better word, it sucks, especially towards the end. I think the most important thing is what you did for the 12 months prior to that, because if you start that prep, that's what everything matters, where you start that prep. And then, I mean, that's going to dictate your success. The 12 weeks, you know, I mean, that's important to get to the conditioning that you want to get to on stage and whatnot. Yeah, but
to push yourself past homeostasis, because that's not where your body naturally wants to be by far.
That's right. So I always like, and so I wrote this little how to lose fat on the carnivore diet. And then part one is all about what we just said, that first 9 months, like that's what you need to be focused on. And no one wants to do that. And I don't understand why. I mean, I understand why, because it feels like you're taking a step back.
It's not sexy, right? No one wants that slow, consistent approach to anything. Like, everyone was like, hey, I put a deadline on the calendar, and so now we have to hit that goal.
But I'm like, you change calendars. I call it part one. I'm like, look, you should enjoy that. You get to eat. You feel good. You know, just lift heavy weights. It's part two when you're cutting and you start to reduce how much you eat. You start increasing cardio. You start doing a little, maybe cycling with some, I call it fat cycling. That is something that I use for the carnivore diet to whatever.
Mitigate what you're using. No, we're good. I love it. That's so, I mean, I totally don't want to interrupt this because I want you to finish unpacking this. But yes, like if we're only really using two macronutrients, right? Protein and fat carnivorously, right? Then if you're trying to lose fat, the thing that you should leverage in cycle is your fat, in which case, yes, there are certain days you keep it up, you throw it up. So your body is still burning at a high rate of it. And then you drop it down to the floor on other days. And when that happens, that extra fat will come in from your adipose tissue that you'd like. But this is the thing that people are like, oh, well, I can't wrap my head around that, or I don't want to cycle this or that. And there's stages to it. Like this all has to be done with you taking your body through these different stages at this time so it can be adapted to what it is that you're asking from it. And it's patience. Like there is some patience that has to come with it. And unfortunately, especially here in the States, man, I found, you know, everyone has got this. Well, we've got to do it now because instant gratification is real. And I mean, if you found me on Instagram, I guess I should expect that, right? But at the end of the day, like that's not the best approach. And it's definitely not the healthiest approach by any means. But yeah, let's talk about this. So you're going to have someone come to you. They've been keto, they've been eating clean, and they want to make some adjustments and are tinkering with the idea of carnivore. Yeah. What are some of the things that you would kind of talk them through first and make them aware of?
Well, I mean, it's exactly like you said. I have to know, like, look, what do you ultimately want to achieve? And if I know that, that's a great starting point. Most people don't even know that. But if someone knows that, that's great. And then if they could put a timeline on it, that's even better. And really with those two things, as far as like, hey, how much time could you dedicate to the gym? And then I could just, you know, take them through what I would do for them. A lot of times people need to focus in what I call the part one, stage one of, you know, we need to work on your metabolic health. And what I would do there is, depending on what their diet is before, you know, I would say, look, if you're going to do this meat-based diet, you eat meat, you eat till like you're comfortable. Do that for however much time it takes. I like to say, I think everyone should be doing resistance training of some sort. So combine that with the resistance training. What I think is even better than if you want to do something like a show or something like that, or get really lean. For example, in November, so let's just rewind to 2018. Most of the year, I ate meat till appetite, 3 to 3.5 pounds a day. Usually I'd say 3 is my average, 3 pounds of meat a day.
Let's give more context. How tall are you? How much do you weigh?
So I am 5'11", 165. I'm in the 160s.
Eating 3 pounds. That's about where I'm in the 180s, but I'm about 3 to 4, depending on my day, as far as pounds of meat. So
yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah. So I was doing that for throughout 2018. And then in November, I was like, I knew around April in 2019, I might want to do a little cut for the summer. Okay. Little vanity thing. So anyways, in November, I bumped it up to 3.5 pounds of meat a day. December, 4 pounds, January, 4.5 pounds, February, about 5 pounds a day. In March, I was still around 5 pounds, and I decreased and totally removed cardio during that time, increased, weight training a little bit in conjunction with that. So basically I got a point. Yeah, I put on some body fat in those 5 months, nothing extreme, but from a strength, metabolic health, you know, my metabolism was just, it was flying. And so then in April, I was like, all right, I'm going to cut back. I start eating a little bit less, eating a little bit leaner, and then slowly increasing cardio. And man, until, what is it? We're towards the end of April, 24th.
Yeah.
Yeah. And man, like in 3 weeks, extremely noticeably leaner. I'll probably be posting up some update pics here soon, but I guess the point of the story is when you set it up right, the fat loss is really, it's much easier to get to someone's goal. It's not, you don't have to go through the suffering that a lot of people go through, which is like, if they're already not eating enough and restricting and yo-yo dieting and already doing too much cardio, like the only thing you got left is to do more of those things. Really, those are your two main levers, and you can only pull those so far before you are just, willpower is going to lose and you're going to be wasting lean body mass. Like it's, before you get yourself in a bad situation.
Definitely. And that's, oh man, I feel like you're preaching to the choir, but at the same time, I'm like, I don't even know how to top exactly what you just said. Like, that's it. That's please wrap your mind around that. Stop the podcast right now, rewind and listen to that again, because it's, it's the truth. And I really don't know if there's something I could say, you know, what would my goal in life be? It would be to get people to recognize that these short-term goals are not the things they need to be focused on. And it's the long-term impact they really need to be aware of. And that's just, you know, it's confusing to people. So let's talk about the transition, because I know there are a ton of people. I know for me, the transition to carnivore was definitely not something I expected. I did not expect it to be as drastic as a change as it was. So yeah. let's kind of talk through that and why that's the case.
So we could probably go through like symptoms. The most common like adverse symptom is GI. I would say for most people, and even people that are fat adapted, they're like, look, I'm already fat adapted. I'm coming from keto and man, it is just going through. Well, there's a big difference. Like keto, you have a good amount of fiber in your diet. Carnivore, you got no fiber in your diet. And so what happens is one of the main jobs of the colon is the reabsorption of water. Well, in a high fiber diet, the fiber is absorbing a lot of that water. The colon basically downregulates. It doesn't do its job. It gets lazy. So when you remove fiber, that's the colon's job of reabsorbing water is not there. And so a lot of liquid stools is very common. And it takes just a little bit of time for that colon to adapt, even for people that are fat adapted. You know, if you're not fat adapted, then, you know, that's another thing altogether. But it takes some time for the colon to get adapted to reabsorbing water. On the flip side, people think they're constipated as well. Usually, this is just a natural consequence of eating meat. Meat is very efficiently absorbed. And so it's like you're actually just producing less waste. So you'll go less frequently with less volume. But people are like, I'm constipated. I'm not going three times a day. I'm like, yeah, that's
you should have been going three times a day to begin with.
Exactly. You know, exactly.
And it's funny is, so I trained canines. I've trained police and military canines for going on 20 years, 19, I guess, either way, really? Too long. Yeah. And so there was a period of time for a couple of years. My wife loved me because I fed all raw. And so I would have the entire kitchen filled up with kidneys and beef tongue and everything, you know, cutting up to feed the dogs. And yeah. The greatest aspect was the less waste. But yeah. In understanding, like, hey, they're using so much more of the food that they're eating, hence the less waste. It's not any different for us as humans. Yep. Right. And so for people that are, you know, just drinking Metamucil by the gallons and wondering why they're in the bathroom four times a day, it's like you can't even absorb, like you can't use it. Your body literally can't absorb the fiber that you're putting in it. So that's why you're in the bathroom. Let's talk about weight change, because I think that I know before I got into the aspect of scientifically looking at carnivore and its impact, I used to get really irritated by people's non-scale victory posts ketogenically, and I would just be like, yeah, but you should be able to move the scale in a downward position. Like, you should be losing weight if you're doing this properly. It doesn't make any sense to me. But carnivorously, weight does not fluctuate nearly as much because of the retention of lean body mass. And so a lot of times there'll be clients that will go carnivore and they'll see the weight increase, and they may see it go up higher than they're anticipating before all of a sudden it starts to come down and balance out. Let's kind of talk through why that is. How does that play out, and, you know, what can people expect?
So obviously it's going to depend a lot on what state the person is before they start this. But, you know, what I found is very common is people lose the initial water weight if they were not coming from keto or, you know, so they're like, oh, I lost 5 pounds of water the first week. That's great. But, you know, it's really just a lot of water. The body's doing a massive fluid rebalance when you just drop all carbs. Insulin drops real low. Very important. Like, if I give one tip to someone that's transitioning, like, air on the high side with sodium. Okay. That electrolytes tend to help, but like sodium is kind of like your main guy, maybe supplementing with some magnesium, maybe some potassium, but really just salt your meat generously. And that'll go a long, long way. But back to the weight question, after that, you're right. Depending on who it is, a lot of times people that are health conscious, they are the ones that need to be eating a lot of meat, eating a lot of protein. Like you said, they start building lean body mass that, you know, they've probably been needing to build for a long time. So, you know, there's a wide range. I see people that, you know, they lost, they were just severely overweight and they've lost, you know, 100 plus pounds in a relatively short period of time. And there's other people that weight is pretty stagnant or it increases a little bit as the body kind of quote unquote heals. And a lot of people have either they know they have insulin resistance, some level of type 2 diabetes, or they have low level insulin resistance they're not even aware of, where they're not very insulin sensitive. And it takes time for the body to regain this insulin sensitivity. And probably the best way to do it is don't eat carbs, eat just a meat-based diet and incorporate resistance training, and you'll get that insulin sensitivity back. That's basically like if I was going to say, what's the cure to diabetes, type 2 diabetes? Like, look, that's what it is. Get rid of the carbs training and do resistance training. That's how you increase your insulin sensitivity. And that's where basically, you know, the metabolic, basically all our metabolic syndrome, chronic diseases almost kind of stem from that simple little equation. So, anything in particular you want me to dive deeper in?
Let's talk about, I want to hit on two things because we mentioned it earlier, and I know that there are people that are listening to this, especially ketogenic, and they're thinking, I don't want to eat that much protein. And then they're thinking insulin, and they're thinking, well, you know, the insulin spikes with protein and my glucose, and it's going to turn into sugar. Can we kind of talk through that a little bit?
Yeah, I think people are worried about insulin spikes with protein, and really blood glucose levels, like a lot of people have done this diet, have done continuous blood glucose monitoring, and it is incredibly stable. Like you need some insulin, like, but so we need some insulin, like we don't want to have type 1 diabetes. Like there, we need some insulin, but the stable blood sugar is what we find. People are worried about too much protein turning into sugar. Can protein be stored as fat? Can it be turned into sugar? Sure, but I mean, largely this is an unfounded worry. Like eating that much protein, most people aren't even going to touch that.
I mean, I can't even imagine eating that much protein. Could you imagine how full? I mean, dude, at 3 and 4 pounds of meat, it's a full time job eating that much food. Like
that's a good amount. Yeah, when I was pushing 5, I was like, this is a lot of meat. Yeah, most people can't even touch that amount, like eating that amount. And I just don't think that worry is justified personally. There are some extreme cases of people that are extremely insulin resistant that may be better off doing a steep ketogenic diet, meaning like perhaps limiting protein for a little bit of time, very high fat. But in my point of view is like, while yes, that may be more effective in the short term, in the long term, if they just were eating meat consistently, you know, it'll balance out in the long run. But yeah, long story short, I think it's unfounded. I don't think it's supported. I don't think it's justified to worry about as far as if they're worried about storing fat because of raising insulin via protein.
No, agreed. I think it's one of those things where, you know, when I have people send me numbers for their blood glucose, their ketone numbers, I do breathalyzer numbers for ketones too, because I want to know how much is actually being utilized that the ketones produced. But a lot of people seem to lose in recognizing how much their own stress levels will impact their glucose and insulin levels more than anything else.
Absolutely.
And I'm like, it's totally not the protein that's doing it. Like, let's talk about how your day was, because you can send me your numbers and I know exactly how your day was because I planned your macros in the first place. And if you're hitting those, it wasn't from your protein that changed your blood glucose to be 110 when you woke up this morning. Yes. There's so many other factors that I think should be looked at, researched, and, you know, dived into way more before ever looking at, well, it's the protein that's causing it, because that's just not the case. Now, if we're talking about processed protein like whey or something like that, that's something altogether different.
Yep.
But from the aspect of eating meat, that's not the concern. Or at least I haven't seen that with anyone. Okay, I would really like to talk about a couple things. One, let's talk about the sodium and the salt. Why is that so important? Why is that something that, you know, you caution people to overly salt and sodium?
Well, it's going to help you retain some water early on when you're purging water. And so basically it's going to help you not get so out of, it's kind of like a seesaw. When you drop all your carbs, the seesaw is going to tilt one way pretty drastically as far as fluid rebalancing. Keeping a heavy salt is going to help balance that seesaw and not make it such a drastic swing. And then, you know, after the first couple weeks or month, you know, just salting to a taste is, you know, that's all I do. I did an experiment. I had a massive thing of salt and I was just curious how much, cause I'd always just salt it to taste. You know, I never really worried about it. Didn't really count anything, man. I eat the upper limit of salt every day. When I'm just salting to appetite. And, you know, I've done a decent amount of research on salt, and it tends to be like a J curve, meaning like if you eat too little salt, that's bad. If you eat way too much salt, that's also not good.
Not ideal. Yeah.
Not ideal. But I'm definitely more towards the other end, on the high end.
Okay. How are you measuring your salt? When you did this experiment, unpack this, what it is.
Oh, like? Yeah. So I just wrote on the container. I opened this container on this day. 3 months later, I finally finished it. And I have a post up on Instagram on it, too. And basically, I was like, how many servings did it have? And then I balanced it out, you know, divided the servings by the number of days to figure out how many milligrams I was eating a day. That was about 8 grams a day, I think.
Wow.
Yeah. That was a good amount of salt.
You think? Wow. I'm like, I haven't actually measured how much salt. Because of some of the complexity of seasonings I use with salt in them. But 8 grams is...
What I think is worth mentioning is, like, salt is one of those things that in some circles have gotten, like, a bad reputation. Kind of like cholesterol or something
that. Yeah, yeah.
And, like, I don't think it's justified. Like, I think a lot of the research is, like, look, you're eating foods that are highly preserved. Salt just happens to be a preservant. And so you're eating all these canned good foods or, you know, whatever junk that's being preserved. And like that correlation is what's getting measured more so than the actual, any actual impact from the salt.
You said canned foods and stuff. And the first thing I jumped to is someone's going to listen to this and think that spam is a carnivore aspect of thing. And it's not. If you're thinking about eating spam for your carnivore diet, please stop. Don't go there. Okay. So my next question is going to be, we talked about red meat a little bit and having that be such a heavy aspect of what the meat intake looks like. Why?
So there's a couple of things. One is the macronutrient breakdown. Like it's a little bit more favorable towards closer to ketogenic ratios, I'd say. If you tend towards a little bit fattier cuts, which a lot of carnivores tend to do if they're really focused on, like, you know, feeling good. You know, I would recommend erring towards fattier cuts than leaner cuts, especially early on. I mean, you can. I say I actually eat leaner than most of people in the carnivore community, and I feel okay with that. I think part of that has to do with I've eaten a high protein diet for a very, very long time, and there's probably some adaptation to that. But like just eating chicken breast all day, man, you're gonna not feel very good in a very short order. Like you need the fat. There's all differences in the micronutrient content as well as. It's important to know what your food, the foods you're eating, what that food is eating. And a lot of chicken, poultry, you know, it's a lot of that's factory farm stuff that maybe not as ideal as some, you know, a ruminant, which has, you know, a very complex digestive system that can handle feed that is not ideal. I mean, it's a little bit better to eat cattle that do eat ideal feed, grass fed, grass finished. I think there's a little bit of benefit to that. But even if they are finished on some grains, their complex digestive tract is better able to handle that than a monogastric animal. So I think there's a few reasons why people do better with beef, ruminants, you know, lambs, you know, a ruminant, versus things like chicken. But, you know, like pork is fine, but I don't eat a ton of pork myself.
So let's talk about that, because I did say I was going to try to keep this crayola clear, and you keep saying ruminant, and people are like, what does that even mean? Huh?
Yeah,
what?
Ruminant. It's just, so a ruminant is basically they have four complex stomachs that give them the ability to digest grass, basically turn it, they have these basically full of bacteria that can ferment grass and turn it into usable energy. It's the miracle of these ruminants. They take, you know, a world that is full of cellulose, which humans, we can't get energy from that. And they turn it into the, you know, the highest quality nutrition that we can eat. And like through that miracle of ruminal fermentation, like that is, you know, that's how we eat. So a ruminant is just an animal that has that kind of digestion versus a monogastric, which is a single stomach, like we have one stomach. Cow ruminant has multiple stomachs.
Love it. And that's the thing I think that people miss out on. They're like, wait, why are you telling me I can't eat chicken? I'm like, I'm not saying you can't eat chicken. I'm just saying that if you're trying to get the highest amount of one macronutrients and micronutrients, you should eat something that is going to deliver that, which is why chicken is so small compared to a buffalo. I mean,
yeah. And like, I think a lot of people, man, there's two extremes. Like I'll eat chicken on occasion, like, and it's totally not against my philosophical nutrition beliefs or anything. I lean towards beef. I think it's more nutritious. I enjoy it more. It is a little bit more expensive. I think that would, if it wasn't more expensive, I don't think I would ever touch poultry.
Yeah, no kidding. That's, I did, I think, I want to say it was steak tender. And at the end of the month, my wife was like, listen, you need to start eating some more like chuck roast and ground beef. And I was like, yeah, no kidding. Cause I was doing only grass fed, grass finished.
Yeah.
And it was, yeah, it wasn't cheap by any means for sure.
Yeah. I'm splitting a half a cow with someone recently. Now that's the way to get a grass fed, grass finished beef at a reasonable price. Like I think it comes down to something two something a pound.
How are we doing this? I'm all in. Can I get a cow?
Basically what you gotta do is there's these lots of, I mean, people should really take advantage of this. Do it and do a little research in their area. Lots of local farms. Okay, so I'm in the Midwest. I'm in St. Louis, Missouri. Missouri's got, you know, we got a lot of farms and things like that. But they're happy to sell you a cow, a half a cow, a quarter cow. So I went in with a friend and we're splitting a half a cow.
Okay, so again, Crayola clear. So where did you just went to Google and you put in local farms and
so reached out? I mean, this farmer is someone I know. It's my girlfriend's uncle is the farmer, so that's a connection. But you know, you don't have to have a direct connect. I would Google it, find a local farm. I was working on, and it could be a project I take up again, but I contacted over 300 small farms, and the vision I had was this exact vision was to help them get their grass-fed, grass-finished, environmentally like sound way that they are raising cattle and getting that meat to more local consumers. And there's some technical logistical issues that I'm gonna work on. But long story short, before either I can figure that out or if I don't figure that out in time and someone's looking for it, you know, all I did was I did research in areas, local farms, and you know, I found databases and things like that.
I love it. What do you think is the most overlooked aspect when people are looking at carnivore and saying, okay, I want to do that way? Whether they've come completely out of the sphere and they are taking like a Michaela Peterson's, I'm going to get rid of everything because I'm dying eating anything else, or they're ketogenic and looking to just get a little bit more out of their body. What do you think is the most overlooked aspect of carnivore that people are like, oh, I didn't realize that, or, you know, I'm drinking coffee right now. Obviously coffee and the coffee beans are not typically, that's not carnivorous. What do you think is most overlooked and should be, you know, focused in on a little bit more?
Do you mean overlooked as in like something that people are doing is causing a negative, like a detriment?
Yes.
Well, so I mean, I think coffee, most people realize like coffee is not from an animal. But I think that's a great example. I have many people I've talked to. And first of all, when switching to carnivore, if you're a coffee drinker, I personally do not recommend cutting out that first month. There's enough adaptation stuff to throw in caffeine withdrawal in there. Like, I don't think, you know, the amount of people that get through 1 month, that's going to drop off consistently or dramatically. So I recommend keeping it in early on. But
do you drink coffee yourself?
So I've brought it in and out. So this is what I've done. I cut it out for about 6 months, and I actually did 6 months a while ago where I ate nothing but beef and water. And I wrote this little 30-day guide. It's actually kind of a long 30-day guide to going carnivore, but I basically structured it in three levels. Level one is kind of like a loose carnivore, meaning like eat meat. If it's questionable, just go ahead. Just throw it in, allow it in there. If you drink coffee, tea, just leave it in there. But this is like getting started. All right. Don't worry about anything. And then level two is more of cutting out some questionable things. Go ahead and cut out coffee. Go ahead and cut out your tea. Cut out some things that people have issues with. Eggs, dairy. Okay. So that's kind of level two, which is basically meat. You can eat beef, you can eat chicken, you can eat pork, you can eat fish, but mainly focus on meat. And then level three was just beef and water. And the reason I structured it this way is after level three, you can add back in food. You can add back in eggs, and you're like, ooh, you know, I didn't realize that was kind of – that didn't sit as well as I thought. Or you add back in coffee, and you're like, whoa, that makes me feel terrible. Now I'm crashing every afternoon. It's basically a framework of an elimination diet, and then adding back in some other foods. Dairy is a good example. A lot of people don't do well with dairy, and they don't even realize it until they cut it out and then bring it back in, and they're like, whoa, yeah, that dairy isn't doing good. So I guess my long story short is there's carnivore, quote unquote, approved foods that can be troublesome, like dairy, like eggs. I eat eggs. I don't do much dairy, but I eat all kinds of meats and I eat fish, but I tested all these off a baseline. Now, I'd never had extreme food sensitivities or allergies or anything like that, but someone that does, I would say this is a good approach to take, you know, because things that you think are pretty benign could be causing you trouble. Coffee is one of those things where people think they need it because of an addiction, basically. And once you get over that, you cut it out and you're feeling fine, and then you add it back in, you realize maybe it's not so good. So I cut it out. I brought it back in. I feel good with it in. I feel good with it out. And so for me, it's more of a social thing, more of a habitual thing. You know, oh, I want something hot to drink in the morning. But for me, and what I recommend to others is like, if you want to be a coffee drinker, cut it out a few times, bring it back in. But that's one thing I think I'd be aware of, that, you know, there's things that are carnivore approved that can still cause issues, or things that are not carnivore approved, like tea or coffee, that you can bring in and do just fine with. So I try not to be on like the zealot side of being like, hey, if you're drinking coffee, you are not a carnivore. Like, I think you should do what works for you, you know? That's kind of my thought on that.
No, I like it. I always tell people, whatever it is you're consuming, you should be willing to give it up to see how it impacts you.
Oh, yeah.
And if you're not, then you should already know you're addicted to said thing.
I agree.
Like, that's it.
That's exactly what I put in the guide. There's things like alcohol, because that's a common question. Like, can I drink alcohol? I'm like, oh, yeah. I mean, I'd give it up for a little bit. If you can't give it up, like, that's something and that's important that you should know.
Like, seriously. You're like, well, I don't get drunk every day. But that's not the point. It doesn't say what your impairment level is for addiction. That's not how that works. I can eat cake every day and I'm not, you know, not going to drive into anybody. But you're addicted to it. Yeah. You're addicted to it. Okay, cool. So, I love that. Where is your guide, something that people can go and get and buy? And
use? Yeah. Oh, it's everything's free. Like, I have a website. So I have two websites. One's
meat. Everything is free. What do you mean everything is free?
So I'm a dentist. I don't know if people know that. So I do pediatric dentistry a couple of days a week, and I have been deep in what's called dental sleep medicine, treating sleep disordered breathing, which is it's upper airway resistance syndrome all the way through obstructive sleep apnea, basically snoring and obstructive sleep apnea. So that's how I make money. This is health, nutrition things. It's always been me scratching my own itch, which I've been itchy over the years.
I love it. That's fantastic.
Meat.health, I have all these guides that are just, you know, help people out to get started, information. And then my website's just kevinstock.io, and the guides are at both places. But yeah.
Let's talk about sleep apnea and carnivore. And let's talk about dental health and carnivore.
Yeah. Yeah. So where do you want to start? Because we could go all day on that.
Oh, man. I don't know. again, I have to be respectful of time. Let's start with the sleep apnea first, only because I feel like there are so many people that sleep horribly. I actually just got a notification a little while ago. My Oura Ring is on its way, so I'm super excited about that.
But sleep is the most underappreciated performance enhancing thing you can do, life enhancing thing you can do. Like, it's and obstructive sleep apnea is one of the most insidious things you can have, because most people don't realize that most people are undiagnosed that have it. And so they think they're sleeping 8 hours a night. They're not sleeping. Like, and so and just for people that are listening that don't know what it is, it's when your airway is collapsing at night. So you're not getting all the oxygen you need. Your blood oxygen desaturates and you're not getting your sleep. Your organs aren't getting the oxygen they need. And it is linked with pretty much every adverse health effect you can imagine. Everything from, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, you name it.
So what you're saying is sleep is pretty important.
Oh my gosh. Like, it is, you know, sleep and nutrition, you know, someone asked what's more important. I'm like, I couldn't say. I think it's that important. But yeah, so I treating sleep disordered breathing, and it's a big problem. So, and it's a very prevalent problem. Like, up to 25 million people in the U.S. alone have obstructive sleep apnea, and there's numerous ways it can be treated. I think the best thing I can say now is if someone is like, thinks they may have it, and it's very correlated with weight issues as well, snoring and weight issues, excessive daytime sleepiness. If you have these things, man, get a sleep test. Like, that is worth it. Getting a sleep test, like, just do it. Because there's treatments, you know, everyone's like, CPAP is the one that most people know about, PAP therapy, there's auto PAPs and BiPAPs, whatever. And it's not an attractive option. It's not a comfortable option. I know that's why people they're like, look, even if I have it, I don't want to do anything. But there's other things you can do too. Like, as a dentist, they can make an oral device. I actually developed an intranasal device that will hopefully be used to treat mild obstructive sleep apnea in the future. So there's things coming down the pipeline, but, you know, sleep is important. Yeah.
How does your airway collapse? How does that even look?
So I guess a simple analogy would be the one that I would use. If you're going to do CPR, they teach you, you know, you lift the chin to open up the airway. What happens is when you're sleeping, you lose tone, muscle tone, and these tissues collapse. And if you have excess flesh and things like that, it just makes it all worse. So someone with a big neck, like a male with a neck of 17 or larger, or female 15 inches and larger, like that's a risk factor for obstructive sleep apnea. So basically, it's just this. This is, I don't know if we're doing video, but if you have a small airway and that collapses, you know, that's what apnea is. Apnea means cessation of breath, which literally means you're not breathing in your sleep.
What are some things that people can do right now? What are your thoughts on, like, mouth taping?
Oh, no. So you want to be – nasal breathing is what you want, okay? And mouth breathing is not what you want. But if you're breathing out of your mouth, I think it's much more important not to just close your mouth, but to understand why you're not breathing through your nose. Okay, a lot of times it has to do with nasal obstruction. And looking at the underlying nasal obstruction or the obstructive sleep apnea or the obstruction that's preventing you from breathing out of your nose, that is what I would address, not a mouth tape.
Oh, I like that. It's trending right now, right? Like, that's the sexy thing. Everyone's taping everyone's mouth.
Someone sent me that just this morning. Like, what do you think about this? I'm like, yeah, well...
You try. What are you doing it for? What's the purpose? Yeah. No one. Yeah. How many people are not asking the additional question?
I think that's one of the issues. Maybe it's one question deep. A lot of times it's two or three or four questions deep. But, you know, really asking why, like, that goes a long way.
Oh man, I feel like we could do an entire episode on just that. Like, the additional question. Can you just ask one more question beyond that one? Because you'd uncover so much more if you looked into that. Again, respecting time, I promised I'd get you off here basically in the next 3 minutes.
So, well, people know, like, so the reason I got to go is I have a continuing education, of course.
You got to love that.
I got a course I got to go to.
Yeah, well, listen, I mean, we're good with that. I definitely want to make sure.
It's on dental sleep medicine, so.
It's important.
We got to keep 50 hours of CE, but it's good to always keep up with, you know, what's happening in sleep.
I mean, or what's not happening in slavery.
Or, yeah, exactly. Yeah. What's not happening.
Where is, we threw your website out there, but where can everybody find you?
I'll tell you what, like, I put all my best stuff in my newsletter. I send a Saturday morning newsletter every week, and I treat all the members that sign up for that, I treat them like family. Like, I don't spam or anything. I just try and put my best stuff out there. So if you're getting that, you get all my best stuff. But you know, I'm around all the social media sites. If you're looking for the guides are at meet.health. And I also have them on my website at kevinstock.io.
And then how do they sign up for your newsletter? Yeah, how do I sign up for your newsletter? I didn't even know you had a newsletter.
Yeah, it's at go to kevinstock.io, and I tried to keep the website simple and it's not good enough, so I'm going to fix it. But if you click on start here, it should be right there at the top.
Very cool. All right, so the last thing I have to ask you, because this is vitally important, man.
Yes,
you're in St. Louis. Yep. My absolute favorite place to go to eat in St. Louis is Pappy's Smokehouse.
Ah, yeah.
I friggin' love that place.
Yeah, they got lines out the door.
They make a brisket sandwich minus the bread, obviously, that my wife literally craves every time we're even close. So my question is, where's your favorite place to eat and what do you order?
Well, when you're in town, we're gonna have to go to Pappy's. Man, that's a good question, because I like maybe a lot of carnivores, I don't go out to eat a whole lot. Just because you know, I cook a lot at home. There is this I'm trying to think. The last place I went, I was taken for my birthday. It was all you can eat steakhouse, Texas. I'm gonna draw a blank on the name of it. It's called
all you
Texas
can eat steakhouse in Texas. Sounds good to me. I'm like,
we're in St. Louis, but it was called the Texas something. I'll have to get back to you on the name of that. But that was delicious. I really don't eat out all that much, which is why I don't have a better answer for you.
Yeah, it's okay. Neither do I. I mean, it's just one of those things. It's like, thank you for making me this great steak that you covered in vegetable oil. I'll pass.
Exactly. Well, if we go to your restaurant, you're like, yeah, I want that. And then I just, you know, I don't want that side, I don't want that drink, just give me water and the steak, and then you know, whatever. Yeah. It's fine.
It is what it is.
Like, I love to go out and eat, so that happens on an occasion.
Very cool. So when you are eating, what's your number one go-to? Obviously red meat, but I mean, like, steak? Are you a chuck roast kind of guy?
I let this secret out of the bag the other day, and I don't know if it's a good idea, so.
Well, it's out now, so.
Yeah, so I might as well keep sharing. My thought is, like, right now, it's what I think the best cut for the price is. Okay. Sirloin tip roast. And you can cut it like a steak, and it's, I think it's tender, and it's usually like, you can get it for like $4 a pound, which is really good price for that here, at least. And the reason I said that I was keeping a secret is, like, everyone's gonna start buying it, and then
it's gonna be $8.99 a pound now.
$8.99. But yeah, sirloin tip roast, I think, you know, for the price, I think that's the best cut. You know, obviously it's not my favorite cut, because I'd much rather eat something else that's more expensive, and that's why it's more expensive. But for the bang for the buck, I like sirloin tip roast. I had one today.
Very cool. All right, good to know. I'm going to buy meat later, and so I will pick up a couple of sirloin tip roasts.
So is there anything, I hate to cut this short, so is there anything that I didn't answer that you were hoping that I'd answer that maybe I can post up or write you or put somewhere?
No, I mean, Kevin, at the end of the day, we literally could have done a 2-hour podcast, because there's just so much that I know we could talk through and share. Yeah, for sure. So, but I do want to, one, I want to honor your time, but I also want to honor the listeners' times. I had Amber O'Hearn on. I want to say she's like episode 14. I don't know, but we did a 2-part episode, and I tell people, I'm like, listen to the episode. I'm sorry that it's 2 hours long, but you know, carnivore for me is one of those things that it's so impactful. It's so powerful. It changes so much. My wife finally started carnivore like a month ago. And just for her, she's been like, man, it's incredible. And she never tells me. I always find out like from her friends as she's telling them, like, oh my goodness, it's been amazing. But it's definitely something that we could just cover more and more and more info. So don't worry. Like,
someone's changed their life. You know, you just got to eat right, sleep, and lift weights. There you go. That's the rest.
That's it. Do those three things, man. And you know what? It's really not that far off.
It's, no, it's I mean, true. That'll change your life. Like, I mean, it has mine and yours, it sounds like, and, you know, thousands and thousands of other people that have let me know that, you know, those three ingredients are very key.
Absolutely. I think it all starts with knowing that they can overcome whatever the challenges are mentally and then putting everything else into work and watching it happen. So,
yeah,
dude, I appreciate you. I appreciate the fact that you are doing all that you're doing to put information out there. It's one of the things I keep trying to explain to people is that, you know, as many clients as I have, I'm thankful for each and every one of them, but I do not keep the lights on with my clients in any way, shape, or form. You know, I do own a few businesses, and it's the thing that keeps my wife and my family supported. So thank you for doing that. I know that one of the things that's great about the space of keto people and carnivore people is our hearts to really help people. And so you taking the time out to share your knowledge, your insight, and your story is greatly appreciated.
Hey, it's my pleasure. I'm sorry it took me so long. I was such a pain to get on.
Dude, you were. It's totally everything. You know what? You're worth the wait, bro. Like, it is what it is, man. You know, so no worries at all. Enjoy your CE class. I know that's going to be tons of fun.
Oh, yeah, it'll be a good time.
If you need absolutely anything, hit me up. I'm here to help and support you as well.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks, Neil. It was great talking with you.
Likewise, man.
The Keto Matrix Podcast, where myths are busted, science is explained, and the keto lifestyle is discussed by industry experts and everyday people alike. For more information and support, go to theketomatrix.com.